Hello, and welcome to X-Men Unraveled. I'm your host, Noelle, and in this podcast, I cover the stories of the X-Men in chronological order. Today, I'm covering two very different issues. The first one is, surprisingly, about Magneto and Thor. The two have an unexpected run-in, and Magneto tries to take on the Asgardian in a submarine. It's ridiculous, and I love it. The second issue continues our progress through the early issues of Uncanny X-Men as the team faces Unus the Untouchable. Professor X is still MIA, but does make one brief appearance in the issue, even though he isn't much help at all. And as I was editing the last episode, I realized how anti-Charles I was, and he wasn't even in the issue except for like two pages. And I guess that's just the fallout from me taking time away from the pod and not being able to rant about how terrible Xavier is as much as I need to. But at this point, I'm not even apologizing because you should be well aware how adamantly anti-Xavier I am. For the most part, these early issues of Uncanny X-Men are just going to go in order without too much interruption, but I'll try to break them up here and there as I can with other stories, like the Thor one today, or catching up with previous characters we haven't seen in a while, like Logan. His story is continuing elsewhere, and since he won't appear again in the standard issues for a while, I want to make sure we keep up with him before his initial appearance. But that is for another day. Right now, we'll continue with the original stories, plus some side issues like the first one today. There's also the fact that the 60s stories are obviously classics and important, but I do want to break them up because they can obviously be a little silly as well. But today, it's all silly 60s, so let's get started. Our first issue today is Journey into Mystery number 109. The cover says, Journey into Mystery with the Mighty Thor, featuring the menace of Magneto, most powerful of mutants. And on the cover, we see Magneto using his power to send Thor's hammer Mjolnir flying out of Thor's hands. And in the background, the rest of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants is just kind of looking on at the fight. Mastermind, Quicksilver, and the Scarlet Witch are all standing together. And Quicksilver does look like he's kind of hiding behind Wanda, so not his best moment. But poor Toad is all the way shoved onto the very left edge of the cover and totally separate from his comrades. Not surprising, nobody likes him, but it is just a little bit sad to see him there. Before we really get into the issue, I want to cover just a little bit of background about the series Journey into Mystery because it really highlights how comics evolve over the years. This series was a decade old before the X-Men or Magneto made their initial appearances. Journey into Mystery number 1 was actually published way back in 1952 with a story featuring Loki, Odin, Lady Sif, and Heimdall, who've all made MCU appearances, as well as some other famous Asgardians. Thor, you'll notice, is absent from that list. And at that time, these weren't Marvel stories. It was published by Atlas Comics, sort of the predecessor to Marvel. Journey into Mystery started out as an anthology series with horror or sci-fi or fantasy stories. And I haven't been able to read any of the others yet, but I really, really want to now. But significantly for both the Marvel Universe and the episode today, Thor made his debut in the 1962 issue of Journey into Mystery number 83. By which time, of course, the series was part of Marvel Comics. From here, the stories continued to cover Thor's adventures, moving away from the original conception of the anthology. Hopefully, Thor doesn't need too much of an introduction here, because that would take at least an entire episode, and this is an X-Men podcast. I'd have to do the whole history of Asgard and Odin and all of it, and that would just be a whole thing. I remember when I started with Namor's stories, I felt like I bit off a little more than I could chew, and it took 3 episodes to explain Atlantis and Namor's origins, so I can't do proper coverage of non-mutant heroes every time we meet them. As much as I would honestly have a great time with that, I do have to stay focused. So the short version of Thor's history is that he's the god of thunder, hailing from the world of Asgard, and he's got a magic hammer named Mjolnir. He's been alive for thousands of years and is a founding member of the Avengers. By issue number 109, Journey into Mystery is well established as Thor's series, and Magneto is brought into this issue as the foe. So, before I get too off track, let's get to the issue itself. Page 1 continues the hype from the cover about the battle between the Asgardian and the Master of Magnetism. It says, "The Mighty Thor, when Magneto strikes." And it has a little note underneath that says, "By special arrangement with the publishers of X-Men magazine, namely ourselves." I just love the old school interjections of the writers. They almost become like side characters at the start of every issue. On the same page, we see Thor admiring a statue of himself at the World's Fair, with a man telling him that it's intended for an exhibit called Hall of Heroes. Thor graciously says that he's deeply touched and will always strive to be worthy of so great an honor. And then the man shows him some other statues being prepared. There's the Fantastic Four, and then other Avengers like Captain America, Iron Man, and the Wasp. And our X-Men are either not shown or did not get the honor of being included, but they are the new kids among these heroes, so we can't really look at it as a diss. After his tour of the sculptures, Thor flies off back to work and returns to his human guise of Dr. Donald Blake. This alias comes from a punishment that Thor received from his father Odin to teach him some humility. He was banished to Earth in the body of a human with none of his memories of life as an Asgardian. His human body was also afflicted with a leg injury, forcing him to walk with a cane. And in that life as Donald Blake, Thor completed medical school and started up a private practice as a medical doctor. By this issue, though, Thor does have his memories back, but has remained on Earth with like a Superman, Clark Kent situation where no one knows who Dr. Blake really is. But while Thor has been busy looking at statues and getting back to his day job, Magneto is currently in the process of carrying out another scheme. He and his Brotherhood of Evil Mutants are loaded up in a submarine with a piece of driftwood on top that sticks out above the water as camouflage. I don't know why they felt like they needed that, because submarines are underwater, can't really see it anyway, but that's what they did. Magneto is driving, piloting, whatever you do with a submarine, and tells his Brotherhood that he can sense the mental emanations that indicate the X-Men are nearby. And he has deduced that they are in the metropolitan area, and this whole plan is apparently the best way to find them. And once again, we do see the strange appearance of his telepathic abilities leading him to the location of the X-Men. We're going to see a lot of this for a while. While Magneto is musing about destroying the X-Men, Toad comes hopping into the room, screaming about a sea monster. Of course, it's just one of Mastermind's illusions, and Magneto walks right through it to show Toad it's fake and to take the chance to call him dumb. Toad says that Mastermind has tricked him again and he'll pay one day. And Magneto does actually chew out Mastermind and asks him, "Have you no better way to spend your time than tormenting the dim-witted Toad?" And Mastermind answers that he's just bored being cooped up on the sub. Just like with any boss, though, you never want to really tell Magneto you're bored, because then he's going to find something for you to do. He gathers his Brotherhood together and tells them to go into the city and track down the X-Men. Magneto is going to stay behind and plan their attack, which is probably not a bad idea considering how badly his plans have really gone up to this point. So the Brotherhood hops into another smaller submarine and heads out while they all argue with each other. And after they leave and he's alone, Magneto starts remarking to himself that the whole Brotherhood despises each other and it's only his will and power that keep them together. Which honestly is just poor management skills. He knows this is an issue and he's not doing anything to fix it, and he's just a dick to them all the time. So what are they supposed to do? But Magneto hops into a giant magnet with a seat in the middle. Think some sort of like giant Acme magnet from the Looney Tunes. And he says that this device is going to allow him to experiment with his matchless magnetic powers. And we see what his experiment leads to back at Dr. Donald Blake's office. He's working in the room with his nurse, Jane Foster, and then all the metal objects in the room start floating into the air. When they look out the window, the same thing is happening outside. There's light poles and watches, a motorcycle, as well as a car with two guys in it, all just flying up into the air. And then everything goes back to normal as quickly as it started. I think we have to assume that like some injuries were sustained as everything crashed back down to the ground. Dr. Blake tells his nurse, Jane Foster, that he's done with his last patient and he's leaving for the day. Jane gets upset because he's also bailing on their date that evening. But of course, he can't tell her who he really is or that he's going to investigate the strange event. So he leaves the disappointed Jane behind and secretly transforms back into Thor, flying out into the city to find the cause of the strange event. Thor follows the magnetic force back to its source and discovers Magneto's submarine. He actually spots the driftwood, which leads him to the submarine, so maybe the camouflage is doing the exact opposite of what it was supposed to. He finds a hatch that's built into the driftwood camouflage, busts down a door, and comes face to face with Magneto. And the two of them start shouting introductions at each other, essentially. Who are you? I'm Thor. Who are you? I'm Magneto. And then Magneto has to show off his power and fixes the door, lifting it into the air and putting it back into place. Magneto mistakenly believes that Thor must be a mutant, and he says that he and Thor should be allies. Thor decides to hear him out, and Magneto leads him to another room full of treasures, including one very large bag of gold, in order to entice Thor. But when Magneto reveals that he wants Thor to join the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, the pleasantries are over. Thor says that he's no evil mutant, he's the son of Odin and the protector of the human race. Of course, now they're fully at odds. That's not gonna fly with Magneto. He pulls metal paneling off the floor and wraps Thor up in it, like a cocoon, but of course Thor is able to escape pretty easily. He then launches Mjolnir at Magneto, who probably would not be able to pick it up if I had to guess, but he does use his powers to at least send it off course and not get hit. The two of them end up in a fist fight, but Magneto is able to fling Thor into another room with his powers, importantly, without Mjolnir. After being separated from the hammer, Thor is transformed back into the body of his alter ego, Donald Blake, with all of his superhuman abilities gone. Magneto then just straight up tries to kill him. He sends all the metal rivets that are in the walls flying through the room like bullets, but miraculously, Blake is able to avoid getting hit. And then he manages to escape the room through a crack in the wall. But Magneto is not giving up that easy. As Blake is running through the sub, Magneto uses all the devices and objects in it to attack him. Unfortunately for him, his Brotherhood did manage to find the X-Men, but they're now being chased by them through the city and need Magneto's help. He answers a call from them on the radio and just tells them to hang on, hold the X-Men off until he's free. Magneto's distraction allowed Blake to find Mjolnir, and Thor is back. They start fighting again, and Magneto decides to play dirty because he's in his 60s villain era, and he primes a thermonuclear proton bomb to detonate on the sub and take out Thor. After getting the bomb set up, Magneto jets off in yet another submarine, waiting for the explosion to deal with his new enemy. But his plan is foiled when the X-Men chase him off in their own sub and Iceman freezes the bomb. We don't actually see the X-Men, just the side of their submarine marked with an X, and then the ice coating the bomb. Thor leaves the sub, like, completely confused, saying, "I'm not fully certain what transpired below," but he knows Magneto is evil and finishes destroying the submarine. We then get a few more panels of Magneto complaining that his inept allies were outsmarted and the X-Men must have traced his location through the radio beam. He exclaims that this is just a temporary defeat because he was born to rule mankind. Of course, with his track record up to this point, that is looking less and less likely. As for Thor, he goes to see Jane Foster and they still have their date. Like I said, it's a pretty ridiculous story, but I love it. Anytime Magneto's meeting someone, it's just the best. He's so arrogant and bent on world domination that making friends doesn't really come easily to him. And I don't really read a lot of Thor stories, but the ending where he just kind of shrugs it all off and goes back to Jane is very much in line with the image of him as a himbo that I have in my head, thanks to the movies. Up next in our original X-Men stories is Uncanny X-Men number 8. The cover says, "The uncanny threat of Unus the Untouchable, with the X-Men all being launched through the air away from a man in a red suit, presumably our unknown villain, Unus." I want to start out with a little bit about who Unus is, because we don't learn a whole lot about his past in this issue. In fact, his backstory isn't told in the pages of any comic until the official handbook of the Marvel Universe number 14, published in 1987. I love these. They're basically little Marvel encyclopedias, and especially useful before the internet when you couldn't learn all you wanted to about every character ever from a Google search. My dad had a few of these in his comics collection, and I always loved reading through them because you get all these details about heroes and villains and their backgrounds. And the fact that I loved to do that as a kid should have been a foreshadowing that one day I'd end up doing something like this podcast. Unus's entry in the handbook says that he was born in Milan, Italy. I'm going to do my best here, but please do not judge me for attempting to pronounce his name. His parents named him Angelo Unashoni until he immigrated to the US and legally changed his name to Gunther Bain. I don't really know why he went for like a super German sounding name from his Italian one. I kind of think maybe Stanley was going for like some Axis of Evil vibes, you know, Germany and Italy. It's not that long after World War II. I don't know. That's my theory. Unus is a mutant with the power to generate a barrier of invisible psionic energy around his body that repels anyone that tries to come near him. He can also deflect energy beams or projectiles that are launched at him. And basically, he's surrounded by a force field. As we'll see in this issue, it's a pretty useful power when fighting heroes like the original X-Men. Like most mutants, Unus's powers emerged in adolescence, where he started his road to villainy by using them to be a school bully. By the time the X-Men meet him, he has channeled his powers into a more lucrative career. But that's about all we know about him prior to his appearance in Uncanny number 8. I know it's not much, but I still wanted to cover it. The issue begins with the X-Men training, but under the direction of Scott Summers, since Professor Xavier is still on his sabbatical. Scott is wearing a suit with his red-lensed glasses while the others all train in their costumes. And Scott is being quite the taskmaster, as Angel is just flying around the room doing his usual stuff. Scott launches a surprise net to catch him, and Iceman laughs, and while he's distracted, Scott takes a cheap shot with his optic blast at the laughing Iceman to remind him to always stay on guard. But the team does seem to be making some real progress, as Iceman is able to bring his ice-covered form to a lower temperature and look more like ice than like a snowman. Jean, on the other hand, is set to a more womanly task of threading a string through a board with holes punched in it with her telepathic powers. And as Scott judges her work and praises her for only missing one stitch, he starts thinking to himself about how he wants to tell Jean how beautiful she is before reminding himself that he's the leader now and can't give in to his emotions. And to me, this moment is real proof that Scott has to be in love to think that Jean looks beautiful right now. She's got her costume skull cap mask covering the entire top half of her head and face, and her red hair is just kind of like popping out the sides in two pigtails. It is pretty atrocious, so I would like to add that to the list of Xavier's crimes as well, since he did come up with these costumes. After Scott's brief daydream, he's back to business, throwing a ball at Beast, who's balancing on a rope. And Beast complains that that was uncalled for and accuses Scott of being drunk with power. Scott admits that he might have been being too hard on them, but he wants to live up to the task that Xavier set for him. And then he generously gives them the rest of the day off. Jean invites him to join them and enjoy the day, but he declines, leading Jean to think sadly to herself that she wishes he felt about her the same way she feels about him. There's going to be a lot of this for a while. On the next page, we find Bobby and Hank walking along a street to their favorite coffee shop when they come across a panicked crowd. Turns out some dumb kid has climbed onto the top of a water tower on top of a building, and now he's stuck and not able to hang on much longer. Ignoring the risk to himself, Hank ditches his suit jacket and shoes and races up the side of the building. The crowd below immediately starts realizing that they're watching a mutant and that it must be Beast, but unfortunately no one got a look at his face. Hank makes it to the top of the water tower, grabs the boy, carries him down the building, and deposits him in his apartment with his father. But rather than receiving cheers and adulation from the crowd below, they immediately start spewing anti-mutant feelings and are determined to catch Hank. So he and Bobby cover their faces and run away, managing to escape the crowd. They make it back to the mansion and immediately go to Scott's office. Both of them have their clothes torn and look really terrible. They tell Scott what happened and that they were almost caught by a mob, and Hank then exclaims that he's through. He says that he's tired of risking his life for humans that just want to destroy them, and he goes on to say that Magneto is right and Homo sapiens aren't worth it. Scott tries his best to talk Hank down, but it doesn't work. Hank quits the team and says that he's only using his powers to help himself from now on. Scott and Bobby are obviously very upset, and Scott asks him where he will go. Hank doesn't answer, and Bobby tells him to keep in touch and to let him know if he needs anything. Scott starts berating himself, saying that he's failed as leader, and so he uses Cerebro to reach out to Professor X. Xavier reveals that he's in the Balkans, heading through a cave. Scott asks him what to do about the Hank situation, and Xavier just says nothing, because Hank won't join Magneto or the evil mutants. Then Xavier says he's on the trail of Lucifer, and he'll tell Scott about it one day, and signs off. So much help. He literally just leaves Scott struggling with the loss of one of his teammates. Hank then storms back into the room with a suitcase, tells Scott he's leaving, and that the X-Men should just be disbanded. Without any explanation about his plans, Beast leaves, and now we're down to 4 X-Men. We don't have to wait long to find out where he goes, because the next panel we see Hank a week later playing the villain in a wrestling match. He's got a big, fluffy red cape on, and he's being drawn to the ring in a cage and going by the stage name Beast. How this doesn't give away his identity is apparently just comic magic. I would have gone with a different name. Beast gets into the ring, and we get our first look at his opponent, introduced as the untouchable champion of all time, Unus. He's wearing red pants with black and orange boots, and no shirt, of course, for the show. Beast goes to attack him, but every time he does, he's launched away by Unus's force field. After failing to land a hit, Beast, who is, remember, the genius on the X-Men team, decides to launch himself as hard as he can from the ropes at Unus. This just causes him to bounce off the force field even further and right out of the ring into the crowd. But before he can get back into the fight, he sees a face in the crowd that he recognizes. It's Mastermind. And due to that little distraction, he takes too long to get back in the ring and loses the match. But the fight seems to be completely out of Beast's mind at this point, because he sees Mastermind and Unus looking at each other and realizes that Unus must be a mutant. I guess the force field didn't give it away. But then Beast remembers that he left the X-Men, so even if Unus is joining the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, it's not his problem anymore. In the next scene, Unus is backstage and Mastermind walks in. Unus asks Mastermind if Magneto has agreed to let him join the Brotherhood or not. Mastermind tells him not yet, because Magneto has been disappointed by others before, so he wants Unus to prove himself by finding and or defeating one of the X-Men. Unfortunately for Unus's case, he doesn't know that he literally just did that. But Unus is determined to prove himself to Magneto, clearly unaware of the real dynamics of joining the Brotherhood of Dysfunction. He leaves in a suit and starts walking down the street trying to figure out how to find the X-Men. He's confident that he could beat all of them with no problem. Luckily for him, he stumbles upon a gang of bank robbers leaving the scene of their crime with a big bag of money, which has a dollar sign on it, just so we know what's going on. He attacks the robbers, who start shooting at him, but Unus's powers deflect all of the bullets, which ricochet all over the place, causing the robbers to flee. Just above the scene, the X-Men are in a helicopter because Cerebro has detected Unis. They've left the mansion to go find the source, and they're all struggling with Hank's leaving the team, but they head down to find out about the mutant thereafter. Angel flies down first and comes upon Unis, who ditches his street clothes and stands waiting in his red costume. This time he's added a shirt with like a turtleneck, and he thinks to himself that if he's going to join the Brotherhood, he wants to live up to the appearance. The rest of the X-Men arrive and try to take on Unis together, but with his force field, it's just not much of a fight. The X-Men are not able to figure out how to get past the force field. Luckily, Unis does it for them as he grabs Angel to try and put him in a chokehold, which gives Angel a chance to gain the upper hand. He flies the two of them up into the air as Unis holds on. Angel threatens to drop him, but Unis calls his bluff and says he knows that the X-Men aren't murderers. Angel thinks to himself that he was afraid the X-Men's pledge to never cause harm with their powers would work against them, but he follows it and just deposits Unis on the top of a building and flies away. With the fight ending in a draw, the X-Men go back to the mansion to strategize. When they arrive, they are shocked to find Beast there working on some type of machine. He says that he's only there because he's the only one with technical skill and intellectual capacity needed to create a weapon to counter Unis's powers, so he came back to save them from ignominious defeat. Real asshole way to greet his friends who were just literally worrying about him and missing him. And then he's also in his costume, which is a little bit confusing. Beast reveals that the device will actually increase Unis's powers, leading the other X-Men to think that Beast has truly turned against them. Which, who could blame them? He showed up, he's being a total dick, he doesn't explain what his plan is, and so the X-Men decide to try and stop him, but Beast is able to escape and chase down Unis. Unis is currently at home on the phone with Mastermind, asking for another chance from Magneto. He's starting to sound really desperate. But Hank barges in and shoots the device, sending a ray of green energy at Unis. Immediately, Unis can sense that his powers have increased. The rest of the X-Men arrive just then to see that they were too late to stop Beast. They plan to go after Unis, but Beast holds them back, and the X-Men confront him, with Jean saying she can't believe that Hank would betray them. While they argue, Unis is testing out his new powers. He can now push any object away from himself, but then he realizes he also can't get close to anything that he wants to. He goes to grab his cigarettes off the table, and they just bounce away, and then even the table is pushed away from him. So his powers are now completely out of control. Unis is distraught and heads out into the street, where every person and object he passes is pushed or launched away. He eventually gets hungry and goes into a restaurant, but the food flies off the plate. He can't even touch the food. The X-Men by now are back at the mansion trying to come up with a new plan to take on Unis, and so far the best that they have is dropping a bubble of plastic over him. But Bobby was sent to follow Unis, and he calls them with news. He tells them to meet him, and they take off in their helicopter. Beast is with them, but they're all still suspicious. They go into the restaurant where Unis was trying to eat and find him just wrecking the whole place with his powers. At this point, he's starving, and he can't get any food because his powers won't let him touch it. Hank then reveals to Unis that the only way to save himself is to let Beast use the device again to decrease his powers, but this time he has some terms. And Unis is hungry enough to agree to anything and says yes. So Beast uses the ray again, threatening Unis that if he gets up to any more villainy, the X-Men will be watching and will use the device again. Unis agrees to the terms, giving up on being a costumed evil mutant and goes back to wrestling. After Hank's success, the X-Men welcome him back happily. Hank thanks Scott for not using his powers against him when they didn't know his plan, and Scott says that he never lost faith in Beast. And so the gang is back together, thanks really to Unis. But this will not be the last we see of him. He does go back to wrestling for now, but he ends up facing the X-Men again later on. But that won't be for a few more issues. Next time, the X-Men will be reunited with Professor Xavier, for better or worse. Scott seems to be doing pretty well as leader and, like, actually cares about his teammates, unlike Xavier, who's more worried about using these kids for his own goals than anything else. And I don't care how righteous his goal might be, he is using them. He doesn't even help Scott when he's upset because Hank leaves. I really am angry about that. But we see another superhero team next time, as well as the Avengers make an appearance. The X-Men are continuing to make a name for themselves in the world of heroes. But that's all for today. Until the next episode, you can see snapshots from the issues on the Instagram at X-Men Unraveled. I also just learned that Instagram sends some messages as requests instead of to my regular inbox. So if you have messaged me and never heard back, I am very sorry. Now that I know, I will be checking that and not missing those anymore. I do love hearing from anyone who listens, so feel free to message me there. I am heading out of the country for a little bit, but the Instagram will be up and running and the next episode is ready to go, so I will not be falling behind, at least not for now. As always, thank you for joining me. I'm so glad to be back and continuing with these stories. Talk to you next time.